Booze Dancing Entertainment Network is live on a Whiskey Wednesday. Two-thirds of us are here. Supposedly the other third's coming later. So we welcome everyone to the big shoe here on a Wednesday night. How are we today?
We're doing okay.
Yeah, midweek live cast, which will be turned into a podcast later on. We're going to talk about a movie. We're going to talk about some whiskey. How's life? We haven't done this for a while. How's life?
Doing okay,
Yeah.
a little topsy-turvy, but not too bad.
Topsy-turvy. Topsy-turvy can be good, can be bad. We are in the throes of sports craziness here, and that's going to connect a little bit to our evening, correct?
Yeah, exactly. Because you know what month it is, right?
It is,
Red October.
it is, oh, it's Red October, and that is not the movie. And that is not the movie today.
Not the movie, baby. Not the movie.
That is not the movie.
The.
Wouldn't that be something if it was again?
I wouldn't mind. I'd see that
We
again.
probably could do it again with Red October.
Oh, totally. Totally. By the way, when we did Red October, wasn't it during Red October?
I don't recall that. We'll have to go to the archives.
I'll go to the archives eventually. But in the meantime, I think I should run the intro.
Run the old intro and we'll get the shoe on the road.
Okie
dokie. Welcome to What We Watch When We Drink, a Booze Dancing Entertainment Network podcast. Featuring lively discussions about movies, TV shows, and anything else that we're watching while we drink our favorite boozy beverages. If you enjoy this show, please subscribe on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, Google, Audible, and anywhere else you get your podcasts. You can also find us on boozedancing.com, and if you have any questions, comments, show, or drink suggestions, email us at boozedancing@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you.
And we'd love to hear from you tonight. If you're watching us tonight on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, boozedancing.com, you can definitely put make some comments to us in the chat, and we'd be happy to chat with you. This is Booze Dancing. This is the one show, one drink, sort of. It's two drinks, one show tonight.
We'll just call it What We Watch When We Drink. Keep it simple.
What We Watch When We Drink, the famous podcast from boozedancing.com. This is the unofficial podcast of record for the Major League Baseball playoffs. We sit here with the Phillies up 2-0 over the Diamondbacks, 2-0, and the Rangers are up 2-0 on the much hated Houston Astros. And as we speak, game three with those two, it is 4-0 Houston, and we hope that changes really soon because we do not like the Astros. As we were talking about earlier, before we came on, we'll get some updates to you during the night on from the Booze Dancing Sports Wire. But now we can talk about playoffs all night. I know I could. This is the greatest time of year. You got baseball playoffs. You got football, hockey started, NHL started this week. NBA starts next week. It is sports insanity, correct?
Correct.
But we are going to do something else. We're going to talk about a couple of whiskeys and a movie. What's our movie?
The movie is called Angels in the Outfield. Now, it's not the remake. It is the 1951 original.
We don't go for the remakes. We go for the original.
Well, I was curious. I was really, really curious. And it's from 1951. It stars Paul Douglas and Janet Leigh.
Yeah, you this is a classic and it's in beautiful black and white.
It is in beautiful black and white. It looks fantastic.
It does look fantastic. We are going to talk about that movie in depth. And we have two whiskeys, not one, but two from our friends at Impex Beverages from the same distillery. You say it.
All right. So they're both from Ardnamurchan.
Sure, that was pretty good.
Ardnamurchan? Sure. I do pronunciation well.
I will spell it for the home audience. It's Ardnamurchan. You can pronounce it any way you damn well please.
Ardnamurchan.
I believe it's Scottish.
Ardnamurchan. And for those who don't know, that's what it looks
Ooh, look
like.
at that. There you go.
Ardnamurchan.
Ardnamurchan. It's easy
Ardnamurchan.
once you see all the letters. It looks like a freaking eye chart. So we're going to start off with the McLean's Nose Blend, correct?
Correct.
That we were sent to, as I said, from Impex Beverages, who are the importers of this fine brand from Scotland. And you have a words from the Impex folks or?
Yeah, I do actually. Okay, so it's McLean's Nose Blended Scotch Whiskey. Blended and brought to life by Team Aardmerican, endorsed and approved by our chief nose. McLean's Nose is a nod to our rugged Western Peninsula home and an homage to the long mentorship we have received from Mr. Charles McLean. The bottle labels have been designed in partnership with Scottish artist Ruben Sean de Gourlay. I don't know. They are made from crushed barley, a sustainable paper, and include QR codes that share information about the whiskey and its makeup. Here's a little bit more about it. Blended to have a West Coast character with both a high malt content, 70%, and a high proportion of ex-sherry casks. Unchill filtered, no color added, 46% ABV, 25,000 bottle initial release, 3,384 bottles for the United States.
Wow. There we go. So that is where we are. I'm going to pour some.
Okay.
In my cute little bottle.
Pour right there, right there. Ba, 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 ba,
ba. Where's my little... There we go. Look at that. Look at that. Look at that. All right. Put our nose in that thing.
Yes. Oh, hold on. You're skipping a step there, bro.
Oh, we're going to do the cheers ring first?
Okay, yes, sir.
I don't have a good piece of glass, but this will have to work.
That's okay.
Ready?
Sir. Cheers.
Cheers. Ding. All right. We are ready to go.
Oh, smells lovely. Smells lovely. It's fruity. Not particularly smoky. Just a lot of fruit.
Very, very fruit forward.
I'm getting like baked apples.
Cinnamon.
Yep. Apple, cinnamon, a little bit of vanilla, maybe some pear. Smells nice.
Maybe some raisin?
Sure. So it's like a French apple pie.
Oh, there you go.
How about that?
There you go. Before we do much, I'm going to take a picture of our smile for the camera, my friend. There we go. Look at that. Someone's going to like that. All right.
Somebody. I don't know who. Nearsighted or farsighted? What would you need to be to make it look good?
Blind. Blind.
Blind drunk, I tell you.
Well, blind drunk. Hey, now. Well, it is really nice.
Smells great.
It's
not hot.
Definitely not on the nose. It's not hot. It just has a nice, clean smell. All right, should we go in?
Yeah, let's do it.
Wow, it's pretty sweet.
Oh, it's nice.
It's nice. I'm surprised about the sweetness.
I'm surprised about the heat.
A little bit hot.
It's got some heat to it. Oh, wait, hold on.
Whoa, it's 46%, right?
We got a pronunciation here. Aardmerican. I can't roll my R's, Joanne.
Isn't that a character in Star Trek?
Wasn't that Ricardo Montalban?
Aardmerican, yes. Mercon.
Mercon?
The Wrath of Aardmerican.
That was Ricardo Montalban, right?
It was, yes. Rich That's, Corinthian leather.
Exactly.
And I think and I you smell know what? Some rich. There is a I little was rich Corinthian say, leather. Yeah, there is, right?
Maybe, yes. Maybe. Sure, yes. Sure, if we wanted to be.
Sure, why not? Of course. So I assume this is a relatively new release.
Yes.
That is, we see this a lot now. There are a lot of distilleries coming out with a lower ABV blend. This is the thing now. It's coming back. The blends are coming back. And this is distillery's version of this, mm-hmm. with an homage to Mr. McLean and the rugged coastal formation there.
So I'm assuming the malt is their malt?
I don't know if they have a malting house or not, actually.
Well, I mean, they're malt whiskey. I mean, they're
yes. Yeah,
that's what I meant.
It's just a blend of their own
of their whiskeys with some grain.
With some grain, okay. And I don't know that, but I don't know that they are actually. They don't have a malting house, I don't believe.
I don't know.
Most distilleries don't, so it's probably a pretty good chance that they don't have one.
Okay,
but it's nice. It's an I hear this term. I've heard this term a lot more lately. Starter whiskey. You know, if you're trying to get into a new market, maybe a younger market, maybe people that aren't whiskey drinkers, this is a good way to get folks into a brand, into the category completely to start. And then after a while, maybe you take them into the single malt category. And maybe after that, maybe get them into a single cask or a cask strength version. But this is a stepping stone, I think, and a very good one.
It is. It's really good. But I would say it's maybe a little bit of a step above like an entry level because it's got a little bit more bite to it.
Maybe because it's 46%, not 43, maybe not 40.
Maybe, but you know, but I'm thinking like for a starter, I would think something more that's a little more easygoing, like a Glenmorangie G10, which is definitely a much gentler whiskey.
So I guess there's maybe a philosophical issue or decision that a distillery might make coming out with a blend, whether you're going to do a straight bourbon finish, bourbon cask. Mm-hmm. Or you can go to a sherry cask or wine cask finish where maybe it expands the market a little bit for folks who like a little bit sweeter palate or fruitier palate. Yeah. I don't know. I think it's good either way.
I like this. I think it's got a little bit more. Too. It's got a little bit more body than just, you know, it's not like a Dewar's White. This is definitely correct. A step above something like that.
Yes, I agree.
You know, it's peppery. It's actually, I don't find it as sweet on the taste as I did on the nose.
That's really funny because I find it, oh, correct. Oh, no, I think it's sweeter on the taste than the nose.
You think?
I'm just, yeah, yeah. I think it's pretty sweet.
I find
sweet.
It really peppery for me.
I don't feel it, find it peppery. Interesting.
Interesting. Very interesting.
Yes, very interesting. Very interesting. Well, on that interesting note, let's talk about an interesting movie.
Shall we jump to the movie?
Let's jump into the movie. Okay. We'll come back to this. We'll come back to this whiskey shortly.
Okay.
We'll let it air out a bit. I'm not even sure how this movie came up in our discussions of why we chose it, but it's a great choice because we're in the midst of baseball season.
Well, that's why. Because it was in the middle of baseball season. We had a list of like 50 movies. You had a couple.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
You had a couple that were a little too serious, and I'm not in the mood for those. Like you had the Lou Gehrig story and Bang the Drum Slowly. I don't want to see a movie about. Yeah, I mean, no. I needed something.
You wanted to see Major League 2.
I did. My team loves Major League. They love Major League 2. I actually watched Bull Durham last week. And I thought about that, but
Bull Durham is fun.
Let's
too.
Do something a little bit more, not obscure, but maybe forgotten.
Not probably very forgotten in this day and age. One, it's black and white. Two, it's from 1951. Mm-hmm. Three, everyone's dead. I think you've got the makings for a forgotten movie right there, right?
Potentially.
But a movie that was remade.
Right.
Much later.
I didn't see the remake.
I think I did. It was an Angels, California Angels, LA Angels kind of motif. Like
did Danny Glover play Guffey McGovern?
That sounds familiar. I don't remember.
I only know because I saw it on the you know.
I think IMDb. That's right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. So let's get into this. So this is. Hold on a second. One sec here.
I got my
Angels in the Outfield, 1951.
Yeah. So it was released October 19th, 1951, what's today? Oh, look at that. Wow, tomorrow would have been the 72nd anniversary of the release of Angels in the Outfield.
Look at that.
We should have did it tomorrow. You know what? Let's stop. We'll start tomorrow.
Good night. This is part one.
All right. That's it. Tomorrow we're night, done. Part we're two. Done. Okay. So, yeah. So this would have been, was it 72 years?
Yeah. Look at that.
So tomorrow is the 72nd anniversary of the release of Angels in the Outfield. So the budget was about $1 million, roughly. I couldn't get any box office numbers on this one. It probably doesn't matter.
I did see it. The box office was, the film made $1.4 million.
Yeah, okay, it was a break even. Then.
Yeah. And the film, once studio overhead was added, the film recorded a net loss of $171,000.
Of course it did.
It was a loser.
Of course it did.
Yeah.
Okay, you want a plot summary?
Sure.
Okay, so
let's tell the kids what it's all about.
Sure. A young woman reporter blames the Pittsburgh Pirates' losing streak on the obscenely abusive manager. While she attempts to learn more about him for her column, he begins hearing the voice of an angel, promising him help for the team if he will mend his ways. And he does so. Oh, as he does so, an orphan girl who was a Pirates fan and has been praying for the team begins noticing angels on the ball field. Sure enough, the Pirates start winning, and McGovern tries to turn his life around. But can he keep his temper long enough for the Pirates to win the National League pennant? So,
that's it. So before we get into characters and scope, it's just a nice movie.
It is. It's a redemption tale, right?
The redemption tale. 1951, you were like 7 years after the war ends. And so movies are coming out that people want to feel good about themselves and feel good about life. And so there's a lot of these kinds of movies, and there were a lot of baseball movies. And this is just one of them. And it feels good. It's a nice, happy cast, and it all ends well in the end. And you walk away feeling pretty good, I think, right?
I would agree.
Yeah,
it's got a little bit of a like spiritual bent to it. There's a little bit of religion in there.
Yes, a lot of interesting factoids about the movie, where it was filmed, and little who was going to be in the movie, who wasn't in the movie, I think it's casted well. The folks in the movie are really good. The story is not complicated.
Not at all.
No. Nope. And you've got uncomplicated characters. Like you said, it's a redemption story about a not very complicated man who's been, he's a baseball lifer, and now he's a baseball manager, and his team sucks, the Pittsburgh Pirates, and he's going to be run out of town by the press, or his players don't like him. Nobody kind of likes him. He's a gruff old guy, and he needs a change. And he finally gets one from the angels and this little girl and the great Janet Leigh, who plays a reporter for the local newspaper, who is the homemaker, runs the homemaking section or something, right? And they throw them into the sports section, right?
Yep, correct.
Well, I loved all the factoids in this movie. The one, talking casting, is that the voice of the angel is James Whitmore.
Yep.
Yeah, I love that. A very young James Whitmore.
And what's interesting is it says uncredited. Why couldn't they credit the guy?
I don't understand that.
There was a whole bunch of people that were uncredited in this movie.
So I was actually looking at the cast of the credited cast. And if you look at this era, if you look at their bios of what they've done, these individual actors and actresses, they have a lot of uncredited roles in their histories, all of them. It's very interesting. So, this is back in the time of the studio system. You just needed people in the background, people to say three words, and they did it because they had a contract and they got their three words and they got their $100 and they were done. And you don't get your name on a credit. Credits were a lot shorter back then too. Now we live in the era where the credits are like 20 minutes long and everyone and their mother gets a credit, right?
That's true.
Then that wasn't the credits were ran in the beginning of the movie, not the end of the movie.
Right.
Sometimes. I think this one did as well.
Yeah, no, I think the majority of films are like that.
Maybe that's part of it. I don't know why that was the case, but you're right. It's funny how many, but it's weird that they have speaking roles, especially a speaking role that is so important, doesn't get credited.
Well, it's funny is when you look at the bottom part of the IMDb where they have all the uncredited people. I mean, and there's some famous people in there.
There are.
I mean, you got Ty Cobb, Bing Crosby, Joe DiMaggio.
Yeah, the cameos. Yeah, the cameos.
Yeah, I mean, that was pretty funny. The whole Bing thing was hysterical.
Crosby actually owned part of the Pirates.
Yeah, what? And when I watched it again recently, I didn't notice that they, I was like half paying attention a couple of times.
We're in my number 21, Roberto Clemente, Pittsburgh Pirate number here for you, Pirate fans out there.
Who's 21?
Roberto Clemente, the greatest.
Oh, Roberto Clemente. Okay, I got you.
Pirate history. Pirates fan here. So, yeah, the cameos are just awesome. Ty Cobb being an old man is funny.
Yeah.
DiMaggio is it's Joe.
Right. Jolton Joe.
Jolton Joe right there, right? Who's the other one you said?
Bing, Ty Cobb. Well, there's a couple other folks that are like not necessarily baseball players, just playing a bit part, but like
Barbara Billingsley.
Who's the hat check lady who's
the Beavers mom. Yeah. The Beeves mom.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a fun movie. It was a fun little movie.
So why is it fun? Why is this movie still kind of resonate with us? You know, I haven't seen it in years. I saw it years and years ago.
This is the first time I'm watching it. I never saw it
before. Yeah. It was a good, and the version I watched, I think I watched it on
Max.
I guess it was on Max, not YouTube.
It looked great.
It was a really crisp. Oh my God.
It looked fantastic.
It had to be restored. It was
beautiful. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it looked really, really good. I mean, it wasn't widescreen.
No.
But it looked really good. It just really, really looked good.
You know, I think it's from that era of this was, I think I read that it was probably written to be a radio show, movie, right? So where people just turned into whatever entertainment was, they were just absorbed by it. And you got sucked into like a really comfortable place.
Yep.
And this is that kind of movie. It's really comfortable. You know, you can't really tear yourself away from it. You like the little girl. You love Janet Leigh. The gruff old guy, you could tell he's not, we don't like him in the beginning, but then you become, because you're a hero, he becomes a hero in the end.
Well, and then you get the little backstory of why he is the way he is. And, you know, he had some setbacks and he lost the girl he liked and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, is it an excuse to be an ass? No, but there's reasons behind it.
That's right. And you bring in an orphanage. You can't not like an orphanage.
Right. Even the nuns are great.
The nuns are great. We know they're not nice. We know they're ultimately really, in real life, they're not nice.
Well,
probably.
I mean, I went to Catholic school, and by the time the nuns got to me, they were all like old and kind of, they were actually all really, really nice. But
how are your knuckles?
What's that? My knuckles were fine. Yeah, no. I had no problems.
Okay.
No got issues. It.
Good. Okay. But It's just a comfortable feeling movie.
I mean, it's a feel good movie, right?
It's a feel good movie, and it ends really great. And you know, and baseball in itself is that kind of thing. Baseball is a comfortable sport. We kind of just slide into it literally, and it kind of just sucks us in, and for a few hours, and that's what the movie is. It's exactly what baseball is. It's that homespun American thing that we all, not all, but many of us just become, it's magnetic to us. And all the little stories about a baseball game, about the nuances of the game, there's no clock. Well, there is now, but there wasn't a clock then. and you just hang out with the game. And that's kind of how the movie is. You're kind of hanging out with the movie. You're hanging out with these characters, I think.
Yeah.
So it makes you feel nice.
Yeah, it's good. And it's funny, and it's, you know, it's a little gruff, and I like a lot of the little things they did too. Like when he's just going off and the way they kind of garbled it all, you know, in the beginning of the film.
So back then there were rules. You could not cuss in movies. There was lots of standards. So the way they got around him spitting and cussing on screen was they garbled his language. So whenever he, instead of bleeping, they did this garbly talk to make it, you had to kind of figure that out. You know, what is he doing? What's going on?
Can I share you a little factoid about this thing?
Yeah, yeah.
So it says here, the cursing in the film was handled by taking an actual recording of classic double talk, cutting it into multiple segments of one or two syllables, rearranging them, and pasting them back together. Now get this. A similar trick was used 31 years later in Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan.
What?
When Spock speaks to Savak in the Vulcan language.
Yeah.
But I just find it funny that, you know, we just had Khan and...
Yeah. Oh my gosh, that is so funny.
How's that for a little coinky dink?
Wow, that is
weird.
Wacko. That's weird. Crazy. Weird. So I like how they did that. That was really cute. Yeah, it wasn't like captions that were in, you know, just gibberish or bleeped out or something. There wasn't a lot of special effects, even though you've got thunder and lightning.
Yeah,
you've got this voice talking to him. These angels that are allegedly out there, you never see the angels,
which was kind of cool because if they did it, and I didn't see the remake, but you know, now there's going to be the angels.
Of course, it's going to be all a lot of CGI and. Right. You're going to see all the they're going to look into the skies and see stuff, and you're going to, things are going to move around. It's going to be all very special effects-y. Mm-hmm. This was not. It was more of the theater. It was more like radio. It was the theater of the mind. And that another way of making it a special movie compared to what we watch now, where everything is right there in front of you.
Well, what was cool too, what I also liked, it never dragged. It's like an hour and 40 minutes, and you figure they're covering what, half of a season of baseball and a whole lot of stuff going on, and they, you know, and the World Series and the playoffs in an hour and 40 minutes. Well, I'm sorry, the pennant race. That was that, who were they playing? The Mets?
I think it was the Giants.
Oh, okay.
It was New York. It was, I don't remember, but I think it was the Giants.
Okay.
Slight update here on the your Astros Texas Rangers series is 5-2. Rangers have just hit a home run. It's 5-2 in the fifth inning. So the Rangers are making a little bit of a comeback, which we want. Yeah, because back in those days, you had two actual major leagues. You had the American League and the National League, and the winners played each other for the in the World Series. And it was the whoever won the league. There were no divisions. It was just all these six or seven teams together. Mm-hmm. Whoever won that league, whoever came in first, was the winner. There's no playoffs. And then you went and they played the other team.
Okay.
And the other league.
Hey, why is it called a pennant, by the way?
Because you would win a banner. The team would win the banner that said, because a pennant, you know what a pennant is, right?
Yeah, no, I know. But
that's what you won at the end. If
well,
you
no won trophy, the, no ring.
Well, there was that too. But the pennant was what you had flying in the stadium the next year. You won the American League pennant or the National League pennant.
Okay. Hey, by the way, we're being invaded.
Ugh. Who is this?
Ugh.
Is this Casey Stengel?
He's oh
nice.
Oh,
nice.
You're here.
Really nice.
Oh, he's it's Casey Stengel's older brother.
Oh, even worse. You people are mean. You're just mean.
I didn't say anything. He did.
You encourage it.
I know.
We're talking about this nice, comfy baseball movie,
and then
the real part of us comes out.
The guff.
What are we starting with first? I got to catch up.
Oh, McLean's nose.
Yeah. So pour it, and then we'll hear. Listen to Mike's feeling about the.
Can we call Mike Guffy from now on?
Oh, Guff McGuffy. How about Guffy Mike?
Or can we call him Aloysius?
Aloysius. Aloysius. Yeah.
You're not very nice. You're not very nice at all.
No.
No. Yeah, no, we're not. No.
No, we're not.
We are joined, I should add, on this on Booze Dancing TV, what we watch when we drink. We are joined by the third leg of this rickety stool.
The stool. Third leg of the stool.
He said stool.
Held together with Elmer's glue.
Elmer's glue and duct
tape. Not even super glue.
Elmer's glue. Not even wood glue. It's white
just stuff. The regular paper stuff.
Yeah, is this our second or third time with this, Ange?
Second. The Impex crew was in town in Cherry Hill at the lovely Benash.
Ah, Benash. Oh, was this recently with Joshua? Or Joshua wasn't there?
Yeah, Josh.
No, he was.
He was the surprise guest.
He was.
Surprise guest, Joshua Hatton.
And we got a big hug.
Aww.
We got a nice hug. Can't beat a Hatton hug. Hatton hugs. Our Manhattan gives a hell of a hug.
That was a good movie, too. Our Manhattan. What do you think, Mike? What do you think?
That's just, it's just so good.
It is.
Nothing offensive. A little bit of heat. Maybe a little more sweetness than some people might like. But I like it. I like sweet stuff.
So back to the movie, Mike. We already
kind
of. To talk about a bit, we kind of talked about the what the essence of the movie is and a little bit about the cast. I thought
that Danny Glover and Tony Danza were inspired folks to play in this movie. Oh, you're not talking about the 1994 version.
How is that, by the way?
Okay, so the 1951 version has like an 83% at Rotten Tomatoes, and the 1994 version 32% of Rotten Tomatoes. So not so
83 is better than 32.
Not so
but
much.
You know what though? Here's the interesting thing with the baseball movie. Now, for the longest time, I really didn't care for baseball. Now I've been in and out with the Phils because they've been good for the last 15 years off and on. So, you know, I've grown to like it. But baseball movies, even when they're bad, they're still kind of good. Yeah. Like, you know, they're still kind of fun.
I think the 90
for whatever reason.
The 94 version got knocked. Because of Disney's ownership of the California Angels, the team was the actual Angels. Right. It was the California Angels. Yes. So it was like shameless plugging for their own team. It wasn't the Pirates anymore. It was them. And the little kid in it is Gordon Levitt.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah. He's a little kid. Yeah.
Okay.
Which is like, oh, how about that? He's an actual adult actor now.
Fascinating. Now, did you go back and watch the 1951 one?
Yeah.
All right. What'd you think of it?
It's an old-timey movie.
Yeah, but it's good, though.
Where the production values are, you know, it's just a different kind of thing. The way it's shot's different. Everything's different. But I think the actors are better than Tony Danza. So it's a little bit better of a movie. The thing that surprised me, the guy that plays the pitcher, that's the old pitcher, is the guy from
Mildred Pierce.
You're like, bring us the usual suspects. Let's make the same. Who's our group of people?
Well, there's lots of interesting factoids in the movie, and the casting is really interesting. Yeah. And as you're watching that movie, you notice that guy from Mildred Pierce. Mm-hmm. All these character actors of the time. There's only really one star in the movie, right? Janet Leigh. But all these other folks, you've seen them elsewhere, right? They're just people that you see in TV later on in the 60s and 70s.
The radio broadcaster. I mean, he obviously was, I don't know him exactly where I've seen him, but I know I've seen him in a lot of stuff.
And the woman that plays Sister Edwitha Spring Byington, she was a huge star on radio and TV in the beginning of TV. And she got an Academy Award nomination in 1938. You know, while Janet Leigh, it's the beginning of her career, so she seems like she's the star. The people they surrounded her with, they're not too bad.
Ellen Corby is in this. She was in the Waltons. She's one of the nuns. We said James Whitmore is the voice of the angel. I think James Whitmore has a fairly long, illustrious career. Keenan Wynn was in so many freaking movies. And
he was a great character actor for probably 50 years.
Oh my God. His bio is nuts. How many things he was in. Yeah. It's crazy. Comedies, dramas, all these TV appearances and, you know, McCloud and Dragnet and whatever, you know, he was in everything.
Hey, question for you. Who was the guy that Janet Leigh shared an office with? Who was that actor?
The guy with the glasses?
Yeah.
Marvin Kaplan. Now, Marvin Kaplan is really interesting.
He's been around.
So he was on Alice. He was the phone lineman guy on Alice.
Oh, forever. Yeah. The little tiny guy that was in there every day. Yeah.
Yes.
And Mel was mean the voice to him.
He was the voice of Choo-Choo on the cartoon series Top Cat. Yeah. He was in Mikhail's Navy. He was Ensign Kwasniak. Yeah. He was on Petticoat Junction.
How old are you guys again?
We're old. He was born in 1927.
Oh, you watched Alice? Come on. Don't pretend like you
didn't watch Alice. Just kiss my grits.
Don't pretend like you didn't.
Just kiss my grits.
He was in The Many Loves of Dobie Gillis. Very, very, very long career as well. Long career. So not as long as our Mr. Keenan. Oh my God. Keenan Wynn is insane how many things he was in. I mean, and probably my favorite was probably Dr. Strangelove. But so many.
Oh, that's right. He isn't Strangelove.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's right. Okay.
Stagecoach, Bikini Beach, Strangelove, Son of Flubber. I think he did The Absent-Minded Professor, Touch of Evil, uncredited. Hmm. The Shaggy DA. There's Herbie Rides Again. Gosh, it's crazy. Santa Claus is Coming to Town, TV movie. Finian's Rainbow, Once Upon a Time in the West. It's just endless for him. That's a career.
He got work is what I'm hearing. He got some work.
He got some gigs. He did get some gigs. Just like Mr. Whitmore. Mr. Whitmore, who's, you know, Golden Globe, Grammy, Primetime Emmy Award, Tonys, 2 Academy Award nominations. Yeah. I didn't even look up Janet Leigh. I should have looked her up. She had a bit of a career as well. Prodigy, and she has some famous daughter or something, right? Does she? Yeah,
Kelly Curtis. Right, Kelly Curtis. That's her daughter.
Yeah, Kelly Curtis. That's her daughter. Let's see. She was...
Well, Psycho, of course.
Manchurian Candidate.
Oh, that's right.
That's right. what else here that we would know? Houdini.
With Tony Curtis, right?
That's right. Touch of Evil with Orson Welles. Psycho. Oh, yeah. Bye Bye Birdie. Manchurian Candidate. One is a Lonely Number. Boardwalk. Boy, she was in a fair amount of television, too. Fair amount of TV as well. Lots of later in life when she got a little older, she was doing, you know, episode here on Columbo and Love Boat and Fantasy Island and Houston.
Everybody did Love Boat.
Everyone does, yeah. Right? Yep, sure. Twilight Zone, that was a remake of it. So she had a long career as well. Before we get back to the movie a little bit, why don't we move on to this other whiskey that we have here?
Let's do that.
Okay, if we must.
Hey, Mike, it's your turn to say the name of the distillery.
Ardna Merchant.
Oh, look at that. We don't know if it's right, but he just banged
it's
it
out. It's not right. Boom, the CH is a K, right? Isn't it Ardna Merchant?
Read the screen, man. Read the screen.
Read the screen, man. Read the screen. Like you know.
God, you're crabby.
What does she know? Did I hear you say what she know?
What she know?
No.
Her and her cats.
She knows nothing.
That myrrh is like so a purr to her. She doesn't know. She's from Canada.
This is the.
Would you say more than one tattoo? More than one cat? Crazy person?
I'm not insulting her again. That was inadvertent. Now that I know.
We love you, Joe. We love you.
All the folks that are going to listen to this later on, they're going to go, what the hell are they talking about? We have been, we had a comment from, a pronunciation comment from the great Joanne McGinnis, the Whiskey Lassie, giving us a phonetic pronunciation of this distillery.
Can we emphasize?
Ardna Merchant.
Can we emphasize the con at the end, like Shatner? Con!
So this next whiskey from our friends at Impex Beverages, the Ardna Merchant Sherry Finish Tour Exclusive.
They call it the Ardna America.
Because they toured around with this one. Is that what the deal was?
Shall I give you a little reading?
Yeah, definitely. Because I don't think this one's is it widely available?
So it's an exclusive tour bottling, bottled at cask strength. The Ardna America Tour Bottling is a combination of peated and unpeated spirit, fully matured and highly active and very specially selected Oloroso and PX sherry casks, specifically bottled for the first U.S. tour and not to be missed. There were 900 bottles for the U.S.
Wow.
It was blockchain enabled through QR code. I don't know. Let's see. I don't know what that means. This is about the bottle spec. I don't know.
Yeah.
And then the whiskey specs, unchill filtered, no color added, 57.8% ABV, commemorative, and collectible.
Well, when out of our bottles, that would be kind of collectible, right?
And my bottle's still waiting for me over at Panache. Never got it yet.
Oh, you got a bottle, Mike?
Get on it.
Yeah, they had a pre-order with Joshua.
Ah, and nice.
We'll just call him our man, Hatton.
Our man,
yeah. I love that.
I'm sure it's been said before.
This one does not smell as hot as the other one to me.
No, it doesn't. Very, very fruity.
Oh, but it is.
Very, very fruity.
Oh, but it is.
Well, you got PX and you got Oloroso in there. You got all kinds of dark fruits and lots of stuff going on in there.
I went in. Oh, it's hot.
Oh, come on. Man up.
It's hot.
Man up.
Too big a mouthful to start.
I love the nose.
I'll leave that alone, by the way.
Hey, now.
I'll pass on that comment.
Oh, that's a first.
Ardna Merchant. Con.
Ardna Merchant.
Whoa.
That's a kick.
That is a kick.
That's a kick. It's delicious. That's a kick.
So, wow. Huge, huge bite from alcohol. Mm-hmm. Huge dark fruit. Prunes, maybe? Raisins?
Yeah, raisins, dates, prunes,
Wow. I mean, it's just, that's a... slap in the facer in flavor and the
in a good way. It's a slap
high
in
karate.
The face in a
high karate
way.
Yeah,
in a good way.
That is really nice. That's good.
Now the first one, of course, is you're getting all that alcohol. The second is going to be
it's all just flavor.
How flavorful it is. Yummy.
That's good.
Yummy, really in my tummy.
And it's got a linger to it.
Yeah.
Wow.
They had some really nice whiskeys when we went to that little thing.
So you guys had a full tasting?
Yeah.
We had like, I think they're not their base, but their, you know, standard issue, Arden American. We had this, we had the McLean's Nose. Then we had a couple of Delphi bottlings. Yeah. One of which was one of our favorites, Kalila.
Ah, so Adelphi owns them, right? Is that
yes.
the way it is?
Right. Yeah, so they're an independent bottler. Now they've got a distillery. Plus they do some other stuff. So they seem like they're pretty, what do you call it, diversified in the whiskey world.
And they're making pretty good product, too.
Yes, they are. They are making some nice stuff.
We did a Zoom tasting. That was with Joshua or not. It might have been Chris. Booty over the pandemic of these guys, and we had 5, 6, 7 of their expressions, and it was really interesting. And I think there somebody from the distillery was with us, but it is really good.
And like you said, it lingers, not the burn in the back, but the flavors in your mouth.
There's like almost no. Kind of weird. It's all front linger, not. Throat linger.
Isn't so much the finish as it's just a flavor. So it's really good.
Yeah.
It's really good.
That is sort of wacky.
That is very, very good.
So you guys had this at the tasting?
Yes.
Do you remember? You did?
Yeah, because they were doing a little advance, you could, you know, pre-buy.
Now this pre-order. This was the, you know, we're doing 5. Wait. We got one more.
secret stash. Secret stash.
The boot.
Can I ask Mike how much it was?
90, 110? I can't really remember.
Oh,
it was really affordable. I was surprised though.
How
relatively inexpensive it was.
How much was the McLean's Nose? Do you remember?
I don't think that's really expensive.
I don't remember. I think they told us the
price 60, for that
was
70 bucks?
Yeah, it was, I think under 60 was what they think they said they were going to sell for.
It's really interesting pricing because sometimes it's all over the place.
Yeah.
We've talked about this before. And, you know, the $10 per year thing. Is out the window.
Yeah, it's gone.
Right. And this is not an age statement, right? So I would have guessed, because it's cask strength and there's only 900 bottles, I would have guessed 150 or more.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really surprised it was around 100 bucks. Any more thoughts on this? This is, I loved it.
It's delicious.
I'm pouring a little more.
Yeah, I'm pouring a little more too.
For the, this is a 7th inning stretch?
This will be the 7th inning stretch. And just so you know,
yeah, what's the score?
I will tell you in a second. What's the score, we are in a commercial break. I think it's 5-2 still.
What did Bugs Bunny do? What's with the Carrot League Ball Club today?
Exactly. You said it. You said it, Mr. Warner.
Mr. Game Warden. What season is it?
It's Wabbit season. It's
baseball season.
Wabbit season.
Duck season.
It's Wabbit season.
Duck season.
Back to our movie for a minute. There are lots of little things I love about this is that it's being a Pirates fan since the early 70s a bit. It's filmed at Pirates Stadium. Just out of my head.
Forbes Field or something?
Forbes Field, right. Forbes Field, where the Pirates and the Steelers played until they built Three River Stadium. Kind of a famous stadium there in Pittsburgh. Some of the weird oddities of the stadium are actually shown in the movie. But some of it was also filmed at Wrigley Field in Los Angeles, where the Cubs, Mr. Wrigley had built a stadium in kind of actually really close to Cantor's delicatessen. And there was a baseball field there for a minor league team, which was the Angels minor league team played there. And the polo, the polo grounds in New York City was some of the, was actually not in the movie, but they used Comiskey Park in Chicago as some of the stadium shots.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yep. And it actually opened, the world premiere was at Pittsburgh's Lowe's Penn Theater. So they kind of thanked the city of Pittsburgh. The very beginning of the movie, the graphic is they thank the Pirates and the city of Pittsburgh for everything, you know, helping to put the movie together, which was nice. So it was a very Pittsburgh Pirate oriented flick.
When they made the 94 movie, they actually premiered at Three River Stadium. So they showed it, I guess, on the Jumbotron. That was their only real tie into the Pirates, is they let them, you know, they're like, oh, we'll do that in the second one.
Here's a little fun factoid. The catcher for part of the Pirates 1951 season was future Hall of Fame broadcaster Joe Garagiola.
Joe Garagiola.
That's right. Yeah. Started with him. They went to the, he went from there to the Cardinals, I believe. Where he, that's where he was famous, most famous playing team. MGM originally purchased the story as a vehicle for Spencer Tracy, who was later replaced by Clark Gable. Gable chose instead to make Lone Star. MGM attempted unsuccessfully to borrow James Cagney from Warner Brothers before settling on Paul Douglas. So that was a, you went from Spencer Tracy to Paul Douglas with a couple stops in between.
You know, of the four, I think the only one that I would could see in the role would be Spencer Tracy.
I think so too. Yeah, I don't see Clark Gable as a baseball guy and James Cagney. Yeah.
Absolutely not.
Well, James Cagney at that point in time would have been older and grizzled. He could have been the manager. He could have been.
Yeah, that's probably true.
It's probably better the way it was, but he could have been.
Yes.
I think Clark Gable is too fancy. He could have been the manager.
He would have been too fancy, I think, too. I agree with you.
He could have been the owner or the commissioner. He couldn't be.
He walks up to the umpire. Yeah. Frankly, I don't give a damn. What was he going to say? I mean, I don't know. I can't see it working.
We talked earlier, Mike, about the cameos. Bing Crosby.
Who owned the Pirates.
Part of the Pirates, yeah. He was a part owner. Ty Cobb, DiMaggio. Harry Ruby's in it. Songwriter Harry Ruby, who wrote a billion songs, I think. Didn't he write? No, he was like the Gershwin of Hollywood, I believe. Ralph Kinder, I think, is in the movie at one point, who was a big pirate star for years. They really did a nice job of adding some baseball people and some non-baseball people to the movie. It was well done, I think.
I like the energy of the movie. You know, it just, it kept going. It kept rolling.
99 minutes.
It was never boring.
Eisenhower's favorite movie.
Yep.
That's right.
It's got to be good. It's Eisenhower's favorite.
It's got to be good. If I liked it. Yep. Yeah.
But it's fun. I mean, it's cheesy. There's some cheesy lines. There's no real great quote. There was only one quote that I thought was kind of funny. You know, dogs have fleas, managers have sports writers.
Well, that's good.
So,
yeah, you know what I thought was interesting? Make this a broader conversation, maybe a little bit. This is 1951.
Yes.
There are no African American ball players in this. Nope. In this at all. This is 4 years after Jackie Robinson breaks the corner barrier.
Nope.
And there was only one or two African Americans in the movie at all. There's a maid, I believe, or is a gentleman who is a waiter. I don't remember, but that's it. This movie hardly broke the color barrier.
Right.
definitely not on the baseball side.
It's in black and white, but it was all white. Is that what you're saying?
It was all white.
And you have to realize in 51, there were still a lot of teams that still didn't have a black player. The Phillies and the Red Sox didn't get somebody till like 57 or 58. They were the last two teams. Yeah,
that's right. Right. Yes.
You know, it's part of its time. Not that it's right, but it's part of its time.
Right. Yeah. There were some funny moments. I thought the stuff with the nuns was pretty funny.
Yeah.
And what was funny is, do you remember the one part where the nuns talking to the kids and the kids are all shining shoes? Yeah. Like, what is going on here? It like struck me.
Is that not what they're supposed to be doing?
I don't know. It was just kind of funny. Give them a trade. Like happy-go-lucky, it's a trade in school. The orphanage, blah, blah, blah.
It's a trade school.
I like the nun. Just like
it really is trade school. I thought one odd thing was that doesn't Janet Leigh say early that she's 24 years old? Her age gets mentioned in the movie early.
Yeah, she's like in her 20s.
Now she's with this old guy manager at the end who's like twice her age. Yeah. That seemed odd.
Well, she was 24.
Yeah, she actually was 24.
But I think they say her age in the movie.
And he's 20 years older. So yeah, you're right. Mm-hmm. That seemed okay then. Now, not so much.
I don't know. I think it's okay now. But, you know, who am I? Hey, it's good enough for Leonardo DiCaprio.
That's true.
That's just a series of beards. You can't convince me that those people are actually his dates.
That's so funny. Well, I think we all like this movie in different,
it's a
different,
lot of
different
fun.
Ways. It's just a lot of fun. It was actually fun to go back to a movie like this and I like the little gems of the of that era.
And I actually like the 94 version. So it was good to see this one because, you know, it's a remake and everything, but you know, I didn't get a chance to see it before. And the thing I liked in the 94 version was the kid was, you know, just Gordon-Levitt, and the lead angel was Christopher Lloyd. I mean, how do you not like Christopher Lloyd?
That's true. Well,
funny. That's I don't remember that at all.
It's Christopher Lloyd. Which,
what year was that? 94?
94. Yeah, 94.
Oh, Matthew McConaughey's in it?
There's a whole lot of people in that movie. It's crazy.
I'm looking right
it's
now.
Crazy who the
is
cast
is. Is it a Touchstone film? It's a Disney movie, right? Yeah.
It is Disney and Buena Vista, yeah. Jesus. Danny Glover, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Tony Danza, Christopher Lloyd. Who's Ben Johnson? Taylor Negron.
Ben Johnson would be the Keenan Wynn, like as a character actor. Like if you pulled his name up on IMDb, you'd be like, this guy's in everything.
Jackson. Oh, you're going to love this one, Ange. Adrian Brody. He's in it.
Is he really?
Adrian Brody.
Yeah. As Danny Hemmerling, Angels utility player.
McConaughey's in it as an outfielder. Neil McDonough, who has a huge starring role in Band of Brothers and a bunch of other things after that. He plays one of the pitchers. Dermot Mulroney plays the bad guy, the bad father to Joseph Gordon-Levitt, who gives him up so he can be adopted.
Mitchell Page, former Oakland A. Carney Lansford, former Angel third baseman.
And batting champion.
Batting champion, yes. Quite the list there. Yeah. Wow. Consider one of the top 10 in one list, top 10 worst.
Yeah, movies. That's probably not something you want to be on.
It's not to gross $50 million domestically.
That's probably.
Yeah.
And the Spring Byington, kind of the head of the orphanage kind of person, it was Brenda Fricker.
Who's that?
Oh, Brenda Fricker.
Brenda Fricker goes on to win an Academy Award for My Left Foot.
Oh, yeah.
She won that. She won that beforehand and then was in this movie, Angels in the Outfield, afterwards. So that's she funny. Jumped into a bunch of comedies where she was in So I Married an Ex-Murderer. She was in Home Alone 2 playing the somewhat homeless lady in the park. And then she's in Angel of the Outfield.
That is so funny. So the man that directed that movie was William Dear, who directed The Perfect Game, Sandlot. He likes baseball movies. Angels in the Outfield. Yeah. Harry and Henderson's School of Life. Mr. Troop Mom. He's all over the place. That's funny.
The Sandlot's one of the best baseball movies ever.
Yeah. Where you'll guess. Definitely. Yeah, I almost suggested that if I didn't in that one of the email.
I thought about it, but I saw this. I'm like, let's do something old.
No, this is good. This is good. This is good. So we liked the movie. Let's talk about the whiskeys one last time. We had the McLean's Nose and the Sherry Finish. What did they call it? That was the name of the tour?
The Arden America.
Arden America Tour.
It's probably more like Merca. You got to roll the Merca.
Merca.
Arden America. Arden America.
Merca.
So we've all been down this distillery a little bit before via the Impex folks. Yeah. Haven't really not liked anything, right? It's all been good stuff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. So we thank our friends at Impex, Sam Fomas, Chris Udy, and the team over there for getting us some samples.
Don't forget our Manhattan.
Yeah.
And our Manhattan.
Our
Manhattan. Any last thoughts, gentlemen?
Did you like one whiskey better than the other?
They're different. I mean, they're different whiskeys.
I was going to say, they're really too different to go pick a winner.
Yeah, I can't say one's better than the other. They're both delicious. Yeah.
I didn't really look at what the label said that Sam's office put on these until tonight. And these are two different whiskeys, just looking at
absolutely
them without knowing anything about them.
Right? You know, the McLean's Nose could become a table whiskey.
Most definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. I would put that up there with the Doublewood.
Yeah.
I put that up there. That this is one of those like, hey, you say you didn't like whiskey. Try this. I think you're going
to
like it.
Right. Right. I think this is, going back to what we were talking about before Mike joined us. Before Mike was kind enough to join the show.
I deigned you with my presence.
Walking in like Bob Hope.
Blessed us. We're blessed. You're like one of the angels. You're like one of the angels.
Yeah, someday I think I'm closer to being one of those. But,
you know, we were talking about like the gateways and all that.
Yeah, gateway whiskeys. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, again, I think it's a step above in terms of, you know, like more advanced appreciation of whiskey. You know, like you said, the Doublewood, the Glenmorangie 10, they're the
The Glenn Libet, the Glenn Fittick, those guys.
They're the welcome mat. You go to the McLean's Nose, I think you're now in the lobby.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're going to work your way to the cellar and, you know, and to the bar.
And I think to a certain extent, you see Dewar's as a blended whiskey. It's everywhere. And I think I like this better than Dewar's. I mean, it's nothing against Dewar's, but boy, I think this is really good.
Yeah. Well, it's got a little more complexity to it. Well,
we don't have this kind of whiskey kind of list talk too often. So what is, Mike, you kind of just said, I assume you meant the Balvenie Double Wood, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So is that, so when somebody asks you, like, what whiskey should I start with? Or what do you recommend as a good starter whiskey? What would a you good guys? Starter?
I usually ask what they like to drink. And if there's somebody who's like, you're probably going to be a heavy flavor guy, maybe I'd direct them to something that's peated a little bit. But in most cases, they're like, I don't drink anything that has big, bold flavor to it. You know, I'm afraid. So you're like, all right, nothing peated. Let's just go and get the Double Wood, the Glenmorangie 10. You know, they're consistent and they're available just about everywhere. So you're not telling somebody to find like a unicorn.
And
so you mean for like a starter, like if you wanted to just
somebody's
like an intro to single malt. All right, let's go five.
Well, intro to single malt, or even just whiskey in general.
Well, I mean, but the thing is, though, bourbon and rye, I think when you know, they're two different worlds.
Let's keep it to the malts.
So, I mean, okay. I think if you're going to start, I would say again, we go back to the Glenmo 10, which I mean, does it get more delicious than that? You know, it's just great. Maybe a Glenfiddich 15. Yeah. You get the Double Wood, an Aucatosh and Triple Wood, maybe. Or even like their base, you know, more like the Virgin Oak or one of those. And, you know, something along those lines. Like even the Glenlivet 12.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't be offended by a Glenlivet 12.
And I probably would steer somebody away from something that's sherried. And I'd steer people away from something that's peated until they've had one. And they'd be like, all right, what do you like? You like something sweeter?
Start with something bourbon cask.
Let's try something sherried, or let's try something peated and roll in.
Right. Because those are things that aren't in, like, let's say, Jim Beam.
Yeah.
They're just not.
Yeah.
Right.
So
my go-to recommendation, almost without question, is, it's funny you said the Double Wood. I always say the Caribbean cask.
Yeah, the rum cask. Yeah. Oh. You get the rum cask. Yeah. That's nice too.
It's a little bit sweet, not too overly sweet. It's not maybe the best version of what a single malt is, because not everything is rum cask, of course.
Right.
But I just think it hits a lot of good spots for people.
Yeah, and it bridges the gap between what you might drink and this new thing. It's a little cocktail-y because it's got some rum hints to it.
Yep. The Glenn Murray 10 or 12 of whatever the lowest number is that they have, I think is a really good bourbon cask that is inoffensive, solid, right? I think the inoffensiveness, I think.
That's what you want. You don't want somebody to get slapped in the face and then go back and say, I never want to drink.
Whether it's peat or whether it's sherry, I don't think people want to get that. And then, oh my God, all whiskeys are this crazy amount of wine.
My first scotch was an Oban. Scared the hell out of me. I don't think it's very well balanced. It's a whole lot of peat involved. And you think, if they all taste like this, I'm never going to drink this again. It's just terrible.
Yeah, I don't. And when I'm recommending stuff, I want people to come back.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You want them to come back and try something different and like the thing you sent them to. And
I think other thing I try to find is, like, I'm going to recommend something to you that you don't have to buy, that you can probably find in the bar. So it's going to be on the shelf. You can try it first and then go buy it. Where, like, the Caribbean cask, I really like that. But that might not be everywhere. The Glenmorangies might not be everywhere. I'm sorry, Glenmurray's might not be everywhere.
My feeling always is, if you can get it at BevMo or Total Wine, it's pretty standard stuff, right?
Yeah.
And if you can get it there, it's, you know, it's the off-the-shelf stuff that you don't have to special order from someplace.
And the thing is, you know,
and pay three bills for it.
You want to get it in the bar so you can try it before you make the investment in the bottle, and they'd be like, I drank one and I'm never going to drink it again. It's going to sit there and be dusty.
Yep, I agree. And now, even bars are expensive to buy, even less shots. So, you almost don't want to spend it on a bottle if you don't like it. Right. Well, this was fun. This was a fun middle of playoffs baseball talk. Oh,
by the way, what's the score, Bugs?
It is 5-2, two outs, and the top of the seventh.
Stinking Astros are winning.
Yeah, but they're still down 2-0.
Stinking Astros.
That's just true. We're in the bullpen now. We had both bullpens going. So,
okay. Any final baseball thoughts?
Go Phils.
I want your Phillies and the Rangers to be in the World Series.
Oh. One more little baseball thought.
I want every ex-Dodger shortstop to be in the World Series.
Did you listen to the latest podcast?
I started listening to this yesterday.
The one about the one about the Phillies and the Braves.
I started listening yesterday. I'm only in about 10 minutes. They're watching the game as they're.
I got about 45 minutes into it. It is hysterical.
It's hysterical.
It is hysterical.
Mike, you need to listen to the podcast.
The thing that amazes me with some of the guys. Not just on the Phillies, but into the playoffs is, they talk about, Mr. October, and Reggie Jackson personifies, this guy just shines. And I always think about Steinbrenner. He brought Winfield in as one of his big free agents. And his comment was, I thought I signed Mr. October. Turns out I signed Mr. May.
And everybody's great May.
and I just, that sticks with me. And you watch some of these guys, and some guys just, the bigger, the brighter the spotlight, the more they shine. And other guys that just shrink away, they can't handle the pressure. And like Clayton Kershaw, not to pick on the Dodgers, he's not a big game playoff pitcher compared to other guys like a Schilling or Smoltz or some of these other guys where their record in the playoffs is way better than their record in the regular season.
Yes. 7-2 Astros.
And you go and you look at Schwarber is unbelievable. It's just amazing to watch what he does.
He's crazy.
Every year he's played, they've made the playoffs. Every year.
He was with the Cubs, right?
Yeah. Every year he's been in the playoffs.
Kind of the Cubs should have never given him up.
The guy doesn't bat 200. Every year he's in the playoffs.
Yeah.
He's just unbelievable. And the monstrous home run to start the game or start the inning, it's the kind of thing that sucks the life out of the other team.
You know what I love is that, the Mets, how bad they suck this year. They spent a fortune in payroll. And now Scherzer and what's his name? The other pitcher.
Verlander.
Are back in the championship series. And they're getting paid by the Mets.
So they worked it out so they could play together. And now they're playing against each other.
Yes. It's hilarious.
And the Mets are paying for all this. Yeah, they are. They're paying for everything.
And the Mets are idiots. And the Mets.
So one last thing. You mentioned Joe Garagiola. Who lived on the same block as Joe Garagiola?
Yogi Berra.
And who was scouted higher?
Joe?
Garagiola. He was projected to be the big impact guy. And instead, he becomes a Baseball Hall of Famer because of his broadcasting career.
Broadcasting, yeah.
And Berra is a three-time MVP and 10-time World Series winner.
And while we're talking about TV and movies, Yogi Berra's granddaughter is, I believe it was this year or last year, she's been promoting a documentary on her grandfather, on Yogi. I think it's being really wide release, not to DVD or to on demand yet, but I would love to see it because I loved Yogi. Yogi is just a great character, like Joe. Great characters, great baseball characters.
I tell my son some of the Yogi-isms. And the only one that sticks with him is, do you want the pizza cut into slices of 8 or slices of 4? And he says, just make it 4. I can't eat 8 slices. And Jimmy, my big boy, he says it all the time. I couldn't eat 8 slices. Just make it 4.
If you come to a fork in the road, take it. That's a Yogi.
That place is so crowded. Nobody goes there anymore.
This was What We Watch When We Drink, the baseball episode. We thank everyone for tuning in, and this will be out on a podcast downloadable soon, correct?
Correct.
And we will be back with another fascinating episode, maybe sometime in the playoffs, World Series, or maybe after when basketball starts going, and we'll talk basketball or something. Maybe we'll do a basketball movie next.
Sure.
We'll see. Fish who stole, what was that one from Pittsburgh?
State Pittsburgh.
Oh, we could do another Pittsburgh.
Do that one.
More Pittsburgh. Isn't Gabe Kaplan in that? Is that
Gabe Kaplan? Kaplan, Julius?
He's the coach, right?
He's the coach. That's right. Yes. Did I mention the 7-2 Astros? In the seventh inning. All right, guys. Should we take us out?
Yeah, play us off.
All right. We got one thing to say. And of course, go Phillies.
Go Phillies. Go Rangers.
All right. Credits?
Credits.
See.
All right. Cheers, boys.
Cheers.
Cheers.
If you enjoy this show, please subscribe on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, Google, Audible, and anywhere else you get your podcasts. You can also find us on boozedancing.com. And if you have any questions, comments, show, or drink suggestions, email us at boozedancing@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you.